listen, there's been a lot of questionable decisions that I have made over time. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of you would feel like this is a point in our relationship where I would have learned how to apologize. But going into this Impossible to Recast movie, I feel it is very important that you both understand there's only one undefeated recasting counselor. I am undefeated. My opinions are
You don't have to
like
say
gold.
That every episode. You say it
really?
Every episode.
I mean, you've competed Gilmore. Once. One time. It hardly constitutes undefeated. Don't you need a minimum amount of appearances to even use the undefeated title?
It's been two episodes. You did Happy Gilmore, and there's we did Dunkirk, and now Godfather 2.
So he mentions it every time. Yeah,
guys, it's hardly a claim to fame.
The goat's knowing to walk away. All right.
Well. It's funny that you mentioned that. We brought you on right after Godfather 1, and you're leaving right after Godfather 2. You're fired. Get the hell out of here. Welcome to the Replay Value Podcast, where we deep dive into the movies we all love to watch over and over again. I'm Phil, joined by my brother from the same mother, our co-host on the West Coast, Warren.
What's up, bro? In the season 5 finale episode, we're going to talk about the classic gangster sequel prequel masterpiece, Francis Ford Coppola's Godfather Part 2. This brilliant companion piece to the original The Godfather continues the saga of two generations of successive power within the Corleone family. Coppola tells two stories in Part 2, the roots and rise of a young Don Vito, played with uncanny ability by Robert De Niro, and the ascension of Michael, Al Pacino, as the new Don. Resembling many of the talents who helped make The Godfather, Coppola has produced a movie of staggering magnitude and vision, and undeniably the best sequel ever made. Robert De Niro won an Oscar, the film received 12 Academy Award nominations, and was named Best Picture.
The Godfather Part 2. Of course, we covered Godfather Part 1, or just The Godfather, at the end of Season 2. So it's taken us 3 years to come back to do Part 2, Warren. Why did it take us this long?
Well, we typically don't revisit the same franchise too frequently.
Unless it's Star Wars.
Yeah,
unless
we get Star Wars, Batman, yeah. Of course.
I mean, they are given.
Indiana Jones, you know, Aliens. We have revisited some of the franchises, but this is certainly, you know, why haven't we done it sooner? It could certainly be the case before the 100th episode, could be argued, but we're doing it now. Do you remember how old you were the first time you saw The Godfather Part 2? Because we all know why we're doing it, but what was your first time seeing it? What was that like?
Well, I remember Dad showing us The Godfather. Now, I'm not going to lie and say that I made it through over, you know, all, what, 3+ hours of the film the first time I watched mm-hmm. it. And I feel like I was, you know, He loved this film as well as the first one. I mean, mm-hmm. I distinctly remember the VHS.
I think he preferred Part 2.
I distinctly remember the two VHS tapes, like the collector's edition set that he had.
I have that set now in my living room the same way
really?
He did.
Nice.
It's his same set.
Nice. Probably a little easier to fit it on Blu-ray. I watch it digital now, of course, but back then. But yeah
we've got it on Apple.
It was on a lot, so I probably didn't watch it all the way through and get it until I was in my twenties.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's until we were watching Sopranos, and then that made us revisit the Godfather movies when we were older that we fully understood them. I saw the film, Dad showed it to us, but mostly on cable television in bits and pieces. And you know what's funny? As a kid, what stayed with me wasn't the Michael storyline. It's the Vito storyline that you really remember. That's really what resonates with you when I was young anyway. That's what I really held on to. I felt like as a child I was sleeping through the Michael parts because I just wasn't old enough to understand it. I thought it was boring.
The depth of it, yeah.
I mean, yeah, but Vito's was just – that storyline's just completely compelling.
Right, because, yeah, I mean, the way that it shows it and kind of flashes back, it is much more compelling, you know, if you're not into the whole film or too young to kind of get it, you know, it's easier to follow for sure, yeah. But, yeah, I do fondly remember those days, Warren, where we'd go home on lunch break, eat
Chestnut
pasta,
Street, watch the 20s, Chester,
watch Godfather and The Sopranos, you know. Yeah, it was good times. All right, well, we'll kick us off. How did the movie get made and who made it?
Above the Line, distributed by Paramount Pictures, produced by Francis Ford Coppola, written by Francis Ford Coppola and Mario Puzo, and directed by Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, so, I mean, we talk about who made the, you know, how did the film get made, but it's The Godfather Part 2. Off the success of Godfather, it was almost a foregone conclusion. I think Paramount was chomping at the bit to get it made.
Well, they were more determined. Coppola, not so much. But
yeah, I did read that, which I did not know that before, you know, researching the film for the episode, that Coppola was not, he didn't want any part of it based on his horrible experience with the first film.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because Paramount approached Coppola to do the sequel and he said no 6 times. Paramount basically came to him and was like, you've got the Coca-Cola recipe, the secret recipe, and you don't want to use it. And then they gave $1 million and Coppola essentially made a long list of demands. He wanted his personal script, The Conversationalist, greenlit automatically. He wanted to be able to write the script to Great Gatsby. I mean, he made a lot of demands. They said, yeah, sure, whatever. Just make The Godfather Part 2. So he ultimately agreed, but he didn't even want to direct it. Even when he agreed to make the movie, it's so funny you say it, he still didn't even want to know part of directing it because his experience on the first film was so bad. Guess who he selected to direct Godfather Part 2? Martin Scorsese.
I did see that. Yeah, Scorsese. Another thing I did
Scorsese
not know.
Scorsese directing a Godfather film. Boy. Wow.
But Paramount said no. They didn't want Scorsese, who I guess...
They wanted Coppola.
They wanted Coppola, yeah. They pushed for Coppola to do it. Which, I mean, with him between doing the script with Puzo, I could see if they're going to say, okay, listen, it's not going to be the same as the first time.
Well, you could see Coppola's apprehension to want to do it because if the second movie bombs, his reasoning was, well, they'll just think the first movie was great because of Brando, and then he'll ruin his legacy. If he just leaves it a Godfather, he'll be the director that made The Godfather.
That's
and he
point,
can make
man.
What he can make 30 bombs after that, but he'll still be the director that made the great Godfather movie. But if he goes and makes part two, it diminishes, you know, the first.
Well,
there's
a lot more to lose than there is to gain by
which
him.
Is yeah, exactly. So it's all the more remarkable that he stuck the landing.
I want to just comment on the timing of all of this coming together. So, The Godfather and a good chunk of the Godfather trilogy is based on the 1969. Novel, The Godfather by Mario Puzo. So it served as a source of the first film and the second film. And then, of course, there's a whole series of books about The Godfather now. But so 1969 is when the novel came out. The first film is in 72. This film in 74. So in 5 years, that much happened. It went from novel to the second
wow.
film. We talk about, we don't even cover movies on this podcast until they're at least 5 years old. That's how much happened in 5 short years. Now, of course, I did see that Puzo started on the script for Godfather 2 in 1971 before the first one even came out. So it's not like it was like a start and stop type of thing. I mean, the wheels, it seemed like the wheels of the Godfather machine were churning the whole time during these 5 years.
It probably had it in mind, you know, this film, it's picked up essentially where the first Godfather left off. You know, 10 years later, Michael's getting his hand kissed, right?
Yeah.
I feel like the first film's a mafia movie, but the second film is very much a personal journey with the father-son characters. It's much more a character study of these two dons of the family. And so writing the script, that you know, what the Vito story is basically plucked from Mario Puzo's book, and then Coppola, a very gifted screenwriter in his own right, wrote the sequel action part with Michael,
which does make me want to call out that this film serves as both a prequel and a sequel simultaneously, which
yes.
is a rare distinction in film. A lot of movies have done it, not a lot of dramas have done it, I would say. We've actually covered two films that have, I would say, are kind of in that prequel, sequel, simultaneous subgenre, whatever you want to call it. One, X-Men Days of Future Past, which we covered this season. Mm-hmm. And the other being the 2009 Star Wars, I almost said Star Wars, Star Trek. Yeah, of course. The 2009 Star Trek film. So those, though, based in sci-fi, which I feel like that is more easily to kind of wrap your head around the prequel sequel thing. So for a drama film to do this is
a gangster film, no less.
Yes. I mean, it's the degree of difficulty is incredibly high to pull this off.
Principal Photography started October 1st, 1973, and they wrapped production June 19th, 1974. Coppola had complete control over production, carte blanche, as opposed to the first film where he was constantly worried about getting fired. So it's just a completely different experience for him. This was the first U.S. major motion picture to use Part 2 in its title.
Well, a lot of the sequels at that time were like comedies or action, like things like James Bond, but it was not typically associated with dramatic films. So not only was it a sequel, but it was a numbered sequel, the first one in U.S. film history. So you don't think about that now, looking back, that Godfather Part II was the first film in the U.S. to do this because it became so commonplace. And I would say now we've kind of gone back the other way to where if there is a sequel, they've stepped away from using the number. You know, think about like the Marvel movies. You know, you have like Captain America, the Winter Soldier. It's like, it doesn't say it's Captain America 2.
I mean, that's just they stopped doing that. So like 80s to 2000s, they all had every movie of the sequel had two. It had that in it. They just did the numbers. They were lazy with it. That started to change in the early 2010s, where, or maybe even the late 2000s, where the movies just started to have it wouldn't have any number at all. The sequel would just have a complete title.
It'd have like a subtitle after it, you know. Like obviously Star Wars episodic, a lot of horror films like the Saws were still numbered, but you're right. We've kind of stepped away, kind of come back around to where they don't use the numbered sequels.
A lot of egos on set, obviously, with the success of the first film, a lot of stars. Pacino, in particular, demanded rewrites the night before production, threatened to walk off. So Coppola, you know, sweated it out. Eventually got Pacino's approval, but he had to sweat it out, you know, writing new pages to Pacino's satisfaction.
Well, I mean, how are you going to make this film without Pacino?
You can't.
I mean, it's almost fortuitous that Coppola was doing the screenplay. And this wasn't the only example of that either, where he had to rewrite almost on the fly to acquiesce the whims of the actors that almost needed to be a part of this film.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have them. James Caan, who was paid his entire salary of the first Godfather film just to do one day's work for one scene in this movie. Again, that's just the success of the Godfather. No, he's smart. He's capitalizing. They need him. He should get paid.
I'd also seen that Brando was going to show up for that flashback birthday party.
Yeah, head of Paramount didn't like him because he didn't come to the Oscars, so he didn't want to pay him.
And, you know, Brando felt mistreated by Paramount, so he just didn't show up. So Coppola rewrote that scene on the fly, and it almost works better, I feel like, to have the mystique.
Oh, no, I would love to have Brando in there.
It would have, but it would have been like over, I don't know. I could have seen it both ways, but I almost kind of like it where it keeps the focus on Michael. Even in that last scene, but I digress. Also, the Pentangeli character was originally supposed to be Clemenza, which makes a lot more sense when you think about it.
It's like the same character. And it doesn't make sense that Frankie wouldn't have been in the first one. Like, where's he been 10 years?
Yeah, so you have, but you would have the Clemenza connection with, you know, the young Clemenza, Bruno Kirby, rest in peace, that he had in with young Vito, and then you would have him coming back, and kind of it would tap into that. It would have made a lot more sense. But
now in post, this film did have a poor test screening reception because the film cut too much back and forth between the two storylines. Coppola and the editors went to the cutting room floor and decreased the frequency of the cuts, but they didn't quite finish. So if you actually watch the third act of the film, it kind of gets a little, it goes back and forth probably a little bit too much towards the end of the movie, but it's really well paced there, the first two acts.
Well, I mean, I watch it now, and I almost, because I know and I expect it, I almost want, I almost, like, to me, I feel like, was the Is there more young Vito? I want there to be more young Vito. As a lot of it is, you know, it's like 75-25 in favor of showing Michael's story, and you kind of want to see more of
more Vito.
A little more Vito, yeah. Music of the film, quickly, I want to say, give a shout out to the composition by Nino Rota, an acclaimed Italian composer, did many, many films in the Italian film market, but also receiving a composition credit for the score of the film was Carmine Coppola, Francis Ford Coppola's father.
Oh.
Yeah.
He involved his family in the movie. He got a sister in it.
So
family affair.
And not to jump ahead on awards, but they did end up winning the Oscar for the score. So both his father and son won Academy Awards at the same Oscar ceremony.
It's weird that it won the Oscar for Godfather Part II, won the Oscar, but they used the same theme from
I do want to touch on that. So you're referring to the love theme, also.
Yeah, the love theme. Yeah, that's right.
So the score for Godfather was not actually nominated, it was nominated, but the Academy withdrew the nomination, saying that the love theme was kind of a take on a work from Rota's 1958 film Fortunella. So for whatever reason, they pulled the nomination, so it was not eligible. So that motif, if you will, or the theme, the love theme, does kind of linger. It does kind of show up in a few tracks in the soundtrack, but it is not on the soundtrack by itself. But it is ever present, because of course it is The Godfather. So I was surprised to discover that it's not on the film soundtrack, but because you hear it so much in the film. And that song is so popular that there is a lyrical version by Andy Williams called "Speak Softly, Love." That was like a huge, I mean, it's such a great song. I love The Godfather. Yeah, it's timeless.
It's iconic. I mean, it's, even people haven't seen the movie, know the music.
Yes, it's so good.
And move on to the stars of the picture.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Five Oscar winners in the cast, starring Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Robert Duvall, Diane Keaton, John Cazale, Talia Shire, Lee Strasberg, Michael V. Gazzo, Bruno Kirby, Frank Saviro, and Dominique Chase, Uncle Junior from Sopranos.
Is it Chianese or something? I never pronounce his name correctly. Yeah, but he's almost unrecognizable as Johnny Ola. But yeah, I know Uncle Junior from the Sopranos. So
yeah, that's good. Yeah, you know I'm going to shank the name. Don't even count on me to do that right. Just sticking to character here. Coppola originally wanted Eli Kazan to play Hyman Roth.
I saw that, which is so crazy. Funny because you have portrayed Eli Kazan.
Yeah, I got to appreciate that.
On screen before.
Yeah.
What was funny is that, and this man, perfect casting for you, because he was the first choice by Coppola and spent so much time topless when he was talking to Coppola.
What are you saying?
I know that Coppola actually wrote a topless scene. Well, I said topless scene where, you know, Roth had his shirt
shirtless
off.
Is probably shirtless. What are you saying? Come on,
topless, man. You know, let's get as sexual as possible into the film for the Roth character.
Nice.
So yeah,
gotta appreciate that.
That stayed even though Kazan went and
Strasberg owns it.
Strasberg
too.
Stepped in. Yeah.
Now we got to talk about, when you talk about the cast, I have to talk about Robert De Niro first and foremost. He auditioned for the first Godfather, didn't get it. So Coppola had him in the back of his mind. Then he saw him in Mean Streets. He's like, he's got to be in Godfather Part Two. De Niro was his most method back then. I mean, he did all the work. This is like 2 years before Taxi Driver, okay? Right, I mean, we're talking about like hardcore De Niro. He lived in Sicily for 3 months, and he spent 4 months learning how to speak Italian.
Wow. Yeah, that is pretty
full of dedication to the role.
Holy shit. Wow.
Now, he only speaks 17 words of English and only has 46 minutes of screen time.
Compared to like, I think 36% of the film Al Pacino's in, or Michael Corleone is on screen. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, but you do look at them almost as like equals. Well, almost equal.
They are. No, they absolutely are. It's that's how you view it.
I mean, it's I tend to associate more with what's going on in the quote unquote present day timeline. So I think it is at the end of the day, it is Michael's story with young Vito's juxtaposed against that, just to kind of see. you know, some of the influence, the and you know, where some of those connections come in.
Now, one thing though, I got to point out, and this is nitpicking, okay, but as brilliant as De Niro's performance was, if you watch his, if you pay attention to his voice, he's in and out on the Brando whisper.
Hmm.
So there'll be some scenes where he's just, he could tell he's kind of imitating Brando's voice with from the first Godfather film as Vito, and then there's other times where it's just he's straight just De Niro talking Italian.
I wonder if that was like a conscious decision. I mean, would you say so?
Well, you have to assume so. De Niro is as surgical as he is as an actor, but, you know, you're live doing the take. Nobody's perfect, so it's...
He's not going full Vito here, okay?
We'll never know.
You don't go full Vito, okay?
Okay, yeah. Actors peak, we're going to say, Pacino and De Niro, their first peak, yes, because the great actors have multiple peaks.
I'd say Cazal, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Dude, 5 movies in 7 years, all nominated or won Best Picture.
Yeah.
All of them involve Pacino, De Niro, and Coppola, but this is the only movie to involve all three.
Yeah, so, I mean, we lost him too soon, man. He was just an incredible
actor. He would have went on to win a 1 Oscar, probably even be one of those 2-time Oscar-winning actors. Like that's how great he was.
Well, I mean, you can't... You always mention Pacino and De Niro in the same breath nowadays, and you would have Cazal there as well as this... You know,
Hoffman or Nicholson of the time. Right, I think he was on pace to be one of those great
generation of great actor. And I feel like so many people are associated with the Fredo character. Go watch him in Dog Day Afternoon. It's fucking incredible.
So good.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He's such a good actor.
So no on peak is no Diane Keaton. Hers was in 77. No on Duvall. His was in the early 80s.
I had those three, Pacino, Cazal, and De Niro. Yeah. For actors, Mount Rushmore, I had everyone.
Everybody. Everyone. Yeah, everybody. One of the greatest movies of all time, a greatest sequel ever, a prequel sequel, call it. I literally had the same thing, everybody.
On my notes here, I started to write names, and then I just crossed it out and wrote everyone.
Yeah, that's what I did too. Yeah, exactly. Everybody. That's exactly what I have. Biggest benefactor. Well, everyone benefited, but I think the biggest benefactor, De Niro. De Niro benefited the most. It established him. Godfather 1 established Pacino as a star. Godfather 2 established De Niro as a star.
Yeah, agree. I definitely agree. All right. I mean, you know, mentioning the actors, it kind of goes without saying the accolades, the talent, the clout, everything of why they're so good. So probably the hardest one you've had to determine. I swear to God, if you do a co-MVP, you're cheating it.
I'm not going to do that. So
okay, good. So who is your MVP?
Look, I mean, there's so many great performances. I think giving it to Pacino is kind of a easy to do, but I can't do that. The MVP is Robert De Niro as Vito Corleone.
Okay.
Not only did Coppola have the ultimate pressure of making Godfather 2 in the shadow of Godfather 1, Robert De Niro had the pressure of portraying a character in the shadow of the great Marlon Brando, and he fucking pulls it off. His performance is the closest to a perfect performance in a movie. It's top 5, one of my favorite all time. I mean, when he brings his wife home, the pair, at the end of the day, I mean, the skill and craft is extremely elite. De Niro is just operating in the peak of his powers. It's Robert De Niro, MVP.
No question. I mean, you know, we've seen Pacino is just as good in this one as he is in the first one. It's just a continuation of greatness. Mm-hmm. But for the stakes were higher for De Niro to step in because, I mean, there was so much that could have gone. I mean, the movie's not going to be as good if you have that role is in lesser hands. And for what he did with it and for him to, you know, establish himself right alongside Brando as a great portrayal of Vito Corleone. Yeah, hands down, he's the MVP for sure. Okay, stats and accolades of The Godfather Part 2. The release date, December. Well, you go back that early in film, 1970s. This is pre-huge box office releases. So release date was December 12th, 1974 in New York City, but for the U.S. release was December 20th, about a week later. Warren, this is the first film that we've covered from 1974 No surprise there. There are a couple others that we've got on the list that to get to. Blazing Saddles, Chinatown, some great films also that year. Budget is also, it's not as accurately as reported as I would say films are today. I've seen it, but like it was supposed to be $8 million, got up to $11 million, but I've seen rumors that it was as high as over $15 million. Mm. So who really knows? You know, opening weekend numbers were not available. Domestically, it's made to date $47.8 million, and when you add in all the releases worldwide, to it's as I've seen the number as high as $93 million as far as what it's pulled in to date.
Ranked number six at the box office for the year in 1974. Tagline, marketing, even had it back then. All the power on earth can't change destiny.
That is lame as fuck.
Yeah, well, you
that know. Is terrible for
coming
the
off
Godfather.
Dunkirk, it definitely feels lame. Oh, Dunkirk had some pretty good marketing. Runtime, 3 hours and 22 minutes, so about the double Dunkirk. You can watch Dunkirk twice and then some.
Oh, wow, you really could. Holy cow.
Rated R, of course, 3 F-bombs.
Fuck you!
And a body count of 18. Scores of the film, Metascore 90, and Rotten Tomatoes 96%. A lot of those are, you know, done retroactive because there weren't a lot of critics back in 1974. But the reception back then was mixed. Some felt the two storyline was faulty, and then some felt it was better than the first film. So it was mixed from the beginning.
I'll just go ahead and put in my personal opinion of the film. The first time I saw it all the way through, I was also mixed about it. I didn't think it was as good as The Godfather. I was very much on the fence as far as to, you know, the, mm-hmm. did I, you know, what I felt about it. But I mean, in hindsight, you watch it more and you know, I feel like as time goes on, you respect, you see the achievement that it is, but I can relate to that the first time having that kind of mixed bag feelings about it. The pacing felt weird.
Yeah, I disagree. I loved it right away. I loved like, it. Right, well, fucking Pacino, De Niro, the idiot, same movie. Man. It was great. I loved them. I loved both Godfathers.
Hindsight, knowing Pacino and De Niro in the same.
If anything,
film.
You go back and forth about which one you think is greater than the other, but a little bit better. But they're both fucking right there, man. Equally great.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, a lot of critical reevaluations. So when you look now, it isn't mixed. It just looks like it's universal acclaim because of the critical reevaluations. Yeah. But at the time, it was very mixed. But not the Oscars. I mean, the members of the Academy knew what they had. Awards of the film, 11 Oscar nominations, and it won 6 Oscars. Best Picture, Best Director, Adapted Screenplay, Best Music, Art Direction, and Best Supporting Actor for Robert De Niro, which made Robert De Niro and Marlon Brando the first actors to win an Oscar, both of them, each, for playing the same character on screen.
Wow. And not only that, but the film itself was the first sequel to win an Academy Award for Best Picture. The only other film to do that since is The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Yep, that's yeah, that's it. Yep.
So, and this is the only, of course, film where the original and the sequel won, both won Best
Picture. That's right. And then the first sequel film to receive 5 acting nominations.
This is crazy. I mean, it's just crazy that these films were released within 2 years of each other, 72 and 74. It's like, how? How?
Yeah. 6 Golden Globe nods, 1 BAFTA win, 3 nominations, another 16 wins and 12 nominations, and it's the only Best Picture winner with a Roman numeral in the title.
Music of the year for 1974, Blast from the Past. The Grammy Record of the Year winner was Olivia Newton-John with I Honestly Love You, a song I'm honestly not familiar with. And then the Billboard Hot was this lame. I'm sorry. The Billboard
Hot was
Billboard Hot 100 is a little more familiar. The Way We Were by Barbara Streisand.
Movies of the year: top of the box office, number 1, Blazing Saddles. Number 2, Towering Inferno. Paul Newman, Steve McQueen. Number 3, The Trial of Billy Jack, and number 4, Young Frankenstein. So Mel Brooks with 2 movies in the top 4 that
Holy
year.
Holy cow! He had both of those in 74.
Yeah. Career year for Mel Brooks. Oscar Best Picture winner, of course, The Godfather Part II, right. And the Razzies weren't around until 1981, so no worse picture in 1974. Average movie ticket price in 1974 was $1.89, adjusted for inflation, that's $9.93. Hmm. On the power of a buck back then, holy shit.
Wow, imagine going to the movies for that, wow.
Yeah, events of 1974, Mia Farrow graces the cover of the first issue of People magazine.
First issue?
Yes.
Whoa.
Stephen King published his first novel, Carrie. The Sears Tower in Chicago becomes the world's tallest building at the time.
At the time, yeah.
The 55-mile-per-hour speed limit is imposed to conserve gas nationwide. Rumble in the Jungle, Muhammad Ali, took place.
Big year.
Richard Nixon resigns after Watergate. And Arthur Fry invented the Post-it.
Invented the Post-it?
Yeah.
Do you remember the film Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion?
I know what it is. I've never seen it.
Mom loves that film. She loves it so much.
That's how I know what it is.
They go to their reunion. They're like, we need to think of something cool. Just think of something that we invented. And they come up with that they invented the Post-it. I think they get called out on it. I'll have to watch that movie again. All right, best scenes and lines from The Godfather Part 2. You got 3 hours and 20-plus minutes to go through here. Warren, good luck. What's your runner-up?
Runner-up is when Little Vito arrives at Ellis Island.
Ah, okay.
I love that, man. You're seeing the beginnings of something great, and literally he is fending for himself right from the get-go.
Well, I think about the age he's at because I've got kids about that age right now. I'm like, they'd be screwed. They could never. It's like
tough kid.
But I mean, also, it's just like he is just funneled through the system. He waits in line. They tell him to go here. They're just like, oh, he's got polio, whatever. Quarantine him. I mean, he's just kind of going where he is told, and then he, you know, makes a new family for himself.
Well, I think it's specifically the shot of when he's looking at New York City the first time, skyline. Yeah, yeah.
Great
when he
shot.
Looks out the window. Yeah, yeah, that whole sequence. Yeah.
No, very good. So my runner up for best scene is early in the film when Michael sits down with the senator, and the senator tries to muscle him around, but you know, you can tell Michael's really in control.
Price is $250,000 plus a monthly payment of 5% of the gross of all four hotels, Mr. Corleone. Now, the price for the license is less than $20,000, am I right?
That's right.
Now, why would I ever consider paying more than that?
Because I intend to squeeze you. I don't like your kind of people. I don't like to see you come out to this clean country in your oily hair, dressed up in those silk suits, trying to pass yourselves off as decent Americans. I'll do business with you, but the fact is that I despise your masquerade, the dishonest way you pose yourself and your whole fucking family.
Senator, we're both part of the same hypocrisy. But never think it applies to my family.
All right. Some people have to play little games. You play yours. So let's just say that you'll pay me because it's in your interest to pay me. But I want your answer in the money by noon tomorrow. And one more thing. Don't you contact me again, ever. From now on, you deal with Turnbull.
Open the door, sir. I'm Senator. You can have my answer now, if you like. My offer is this. Nothing. Not even the fee for the gaming license, which I would appreciate if you would put up personally.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
He's shaking him down. He's trying to shake Michael down. He's
trying to shake the Godfather down. It's like,
what are you doing?
What are you doing, man? But it's just like, and you would think that, like, you know, you think, oh, a gangster, whatever. You know, he would immediately show power and muscle there. And he's just like, okay, you know, it just very calm and chill. And he knows that he is in control. And it's just like, it immediately sets the tone, early in the film with that encounter that, you know, he is the Godfather. All right. Warren, what is your winner?
Oh, easy. My winner is when, Robert De Niro, portraying Vito, waxed Don Vannucci, the Black Hand.
Yes.
Okay, so that sequence is what stayed with me the most when I was young. Him stalking him through the New York street in the market and fucking whacking him. Great.
It is a very memorable sequence. And
it foreshadows the hit on his own life in the first film.
Very good point. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, wow. I did have that very close to being my runner-up. I love that scene, that him following Fanucci on the rooftops. It's so good. However, you know,
by far my favorite.
Well, you know, I'm gonna pick one that hopefully you and I never have to relate to. But it's when near the end of the film, when Michael and Fredo sit down and talk it out as far as to the reason, and Fredo, you know, fully comes clean on his. On what he has done, and he speaks from the heart.
He said there was something in it for me, on my own.
I've always taken care of you, Fredo.
Taking care of me? You're my kid brother, and you take care of me? Did you ever think about that? Huh? Did you ever once think about that? Send Fredo off to do this, send Fredo off to do that. Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere. Send Fredo to pick somebody up at the airport. I'm your older brother, Mike, and I was stepped over.
That's the way Pop wanted it.
It ain't the way I wanted it. I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb, I'm smart, and I want respect.
But it's so misleading, though, because Michael forgives him only to fucking kill him later. So what?
Well, I think that tells you a lot about the paranoia of the Michael character, how important loyalty is for him, how much he is trying to protect, you know, both his immediate family, his kids and everything. But, you know, being the leader, I mean, being the Don. So I think that, you know, that is where you truly see that Michael's a piece of shit. I mean, and you shouldn't root for Michael in this film. He's terrible. But for how he treats Fredo, who seems like he got in over his head. I mean, you watch the film and it's believable that Fredo didn't realize that it would elevate to that. He never wanted to have to contribute to a hit on Michael or Michael being killed, but mistakes were made. And he, you know, despite, you know, Fredo opening up his heart to him and the jealousy of, you know, being the older brother and all that kind of comes to the surface. And then you still see how Michael handled it. It's very telling for Michael as his character.
I mean, I can see why you picked it. I had it as honorable mention, so I don't have to. But it's one of the showcase moments for John Cazale. I mean, he's so fucking good in that scene.
I mean, the best scene probably in the first two films, obviously, because, you know, Fredo's not in the third, between Michael and Fredo. I mean, that's
absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'll kick us off on honorable mentions. I only had a few here. When Kay tells Michael that it wasn't a miscarriage, she had a fucking abortion.
I'm going to change. I'll change. I've learned that I have the strength to change. And you'll forget about this miscarriage. And we'll have another child. And we'll go on. You and I. Well, go on.
Oh, Michael. Michael, you are blind. It wasn't a miscarriage. It was an abortion. An abortion, Michael. Just like our marriage is an abortion. Something that's unholy and evil. I didn't want your son, Michael. I wouldn't bring another one of your sons into this world. It was an abortion, Michael. It was a son, and I had it killed because this must all end. I know now that it's over. I knew it then. There would be no way, Michael, no way you could ever forgive me. Not with this Sicilian thing that's been going on for 2,000 years.
Oh, it's such a rough scene, man. I was hoping you weren't going to pick that. I just don't even like
it. You won't take my children from me.
Oh, that's rough, man.
Yeah, God, man. Bless. It's great acting. You see, like, the just the rage building in Pacino's face when she's just unloading on him. Just yeah, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's, man, that's a rough scene, man.
And I only have one other honorable mention, because you've mentioned two of my four already in your runner-up and winner. It's Sicilian Revenge is what I would call it. It's when De Niro goes and whacks the mob boss that killed his mother when he was a boy.
Il padre si chiama Antonio Andolini e questo è Pezzino.
Oh, è figlio del bottone!
Che succede?
That's very good. I mean, whew, graphic, but
full circle.
I mean, and this is an old man that, you know, that he's not any threat to anybody. He's just sitting there now. And I think, again, that also mirrors Michael, where it's just like he never forgets that betrayal. Now, and that's, you know, partially the reason that, you know, I would say he.
Well, I mean, Vito got killed his mom versus Michael takes what he perceives as betrayal is like you know, left the cap off the toothpaste. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he's a little more. Yeah,
a little more.
Over the top,
the iron in the fist a little bit.
Yeah. I just have a couple more here for honorable mentions. One, I love it. It just it's almost like you don't get a lot. It's a dark film. You don't get a lot of playful moments, and this turns into not really a playful moment, but the way that it starts is playful. It's when Clemenza's like, "Yeah, we'll go get a new carpet." It's like the song that plays. It's just kind of like really light and bouncy, you know. It's just kind of funny, and then you realize, you know, they're breaking into a house to take it and everything like that. But it's just, you know, I love kind of the music with it, and just like Vito's kind of like he's just, you know, his eyes are being opened to this world. It's mm-hmm. It's very well done.
Yeah.
And then the last one is when Pentangeli, when Frankie's character is in front of the senators, in front of the Congress, and he changes his tune. He changes his mind as to what he really knows about Michael.
Mr. Pentangeli, were you a member of the Corleone family? Did you serve under Capo regime Peter Clemenza, under Vito Corleone, also known as the Godfather?
I never knew no Godfather. I got my own family, Senator.
Mr. Pentangeli, you are contradicting a sworn statement you've previously made to me and signed. I ask you again, sir, here and now, under oath, were you at any time a member of a crime organization headed by Michael Corleone?
I don't know nothing about that.
It, just the shock and all of just like, you know, like their plans are foiled, and just like a very calculated decision by Michael and Hagen to fly his brother in. And then, you know, Hagen visits him afterwards to basically tell him to commit suicide so that his family would be taken care of. I mean, just like this, the cold decision making to just address that entire situation is just, man, it's wow.
Yeah, it's. Great scene, man. There's so many to pick from in this movie.
All right, well, let's talk about our best lines then. What is your runner up for your best line?
My runner up.
My father taught me many things here. He taught me in this room. He taught me keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
That's the most iconic line from Godfather Part Two. The first one, the most iconic from. The first Godfather is an offer you can't refuse. But keep your friends close, your enemies closer. That's the most iconic from this one.
So that was your runner-up?
Yeah.
That was my winner for best line because it's so iconic. That's why, is because it's so well, you know, used in pop culture. It's so recognizable. I almost thought it was from the first film. It's not. It's actually, it is only from this one.
Yeah.
And then I did have, you know, the callback. I'll make an offer. He don't refuse is how De Niro says it in Godfather 2, the young Vito. I did have that as an honorable mention, that just for the callback. However, my runner up is again between Michael and Fredo when he is at the party, the New Year's party, and says,
"I knew it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart."
That was my winner.
Oh, so that, oh my gosh, man,
we literally swapped him.
We swapped him. Oh, so close.
Well, you know the old expression. Did we just become best friends?
Nope.
All right, what honorable mentions did you have?
Honorable mentions, first one.
I don't feel I have to wipe everybody out, Tom. Just my enemies. That's all.
Fucking cold, calculating motherfucker.
He's so cold, man. I love it, dude. I love it. Wow.
Another honorable mention is,
if anything in this life is certain, if history's taught us anything, it says you can kill anyone.
Again, cold, calculating Michael Corleone, Al Pacino, just the ice cold blood running through his veins.
That was very close for me for runner up status. That one's very good. Yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier. My third honorable mention.
I'm making all offer. You don't refuse. Don't worry.
And then my last honorable mention would be,
we're bigger than U.S. Steel.
Yeah, I love the Roth scenes, and I forgot to call out when Michael sits down with Roth and they like turn up the volume of the baseball game. It's like very classic mobster, you know, like having something louder than the conversation that's going on. So you talking about Roth made me think of that. I do love that scene as well. As far as lines go, only honorable mentions, only one that I've got that you didn't say, you covered a lot of them, was Roth's monologue about Mo Green and his story and him not being remembered, and like Roth recognizing he essentially knows Michael did it, but he understands it and he's moving on from it, to make it seem like there's an understanding between him and Michael when there's really not.
There was this kid I grew up with. He was younger than me. Sort of looked up to me, you know. We did our first work together. Worked our way out of the street. Things were good. We made the most of it. During Prohibition, we ran molasses into Canada. Made a fortune. Your father, too. As much as anyone, I loved her and trusted her. Later on, he had an idea to build a city out of a desert stopover for GIs on the way to the West Coast. That kid's name was Mo Green, and the city he invented was Las Vegas. This was a great man of vision and guts, and there isn't even a plaque or a signpost or a statue of him in that town. Someone put a bullet through his eye. No one knows who gave the order. When I heard it, wasn't angry. I knew Mo, I knew he was headstrong, talking loud, saying stupid things. So when he turned up dead, I let it go. And I said to myself, this is the business we've chosen. I didn't ask who gave the order, because it had nothing to do with business.
Yeah, that where Roth reveals his true intentions.
Well, yeah, he knows, he's calling out to Michael.
His true motivations, yeah.
Right, he knows he did it, but you know, he's almost going to look past it, yeah. Moving on to Judge Bob's recasting court, where Warren and I will recast the film with today's stars. All rise for the Honorable Judge Bob presiding.
Gentlemen, you may be seated. Recasting court is in session. All right. It's only fitting that we end this season with another impossible to cast movie. So I really feel sorry for you guys.
Let me interject for a second here, Bob. So as we talked about earlier, our season finale for season two was The Godfather, the first film. That was the last episode that we had before we brought on the recasting judge, you, at the beginning of season three. So it's fitting that it's all come full circle now.
The very film that justified the need for a recent casting judge, yes. We are now doing the sequel.
We're now doing
to a nearly impossible movie to recast.
And when we did that film, we recasted 13 characters.
Oh, God.
What were we thinking, dude?
We were
so stupid. Oh, my gosh.
On today.
Overworking.
Yeah.
5-hour podcast.
Yeah. Surprise it wasn't longer.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, listen, there's been a lot of questionable decisions that I have made over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure some of you would feel like this is a point in our relationship where I would have learned how to apologize. But going into this impossible to recast movie, I feel it is very important that you both understand there's only one undefeated recasting counselor. I am undefeated. My opinions
you don't
are
have to
like
say
gold.
That every episode. You
I
say
mean,
it
really?
Every episode.
I mean, you've competed Gilmore. Once. One time. It hardly constitutes undefeated. Don't you need a minimum amount of appearances to even use the undefeated title?
It's been two episodes. You did Happy Gilmore, and we did Dunkirk, and now Godfather 2.
So he mentions it every time. Yeah,
guys, it's hardly a claim to fame.
The goat's knowing to walk away. All right?
All right. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. We brought you on right after Godfather 1, and you're leaving right after Godfather 2. You're fired. Get the hell out of here.
Are we exactly 500? Did I complete the Jeff Fisher?
I bet it. We need to check that. We have got to check. Phil, can you actually check that real quick?
I can check it. So, actually, no, you did not. So, in three seasons, well, we don't know how this one's going to turn out, but Warren has won 33, I've won 30, and then we've had a full-on tie one time, and then Corey won one, and Brandon won one, and I guess you won one.
Okay. So. All right. So the all-time leader is right here, Robbie. Yep. Avert your attention right here. 33 wins. I'm almost catching Tom Brady on the postseason wins. You got fucking one. What are you, fucking Baker Mayfield?
I've actually won more recastings of 185 to your 172, but as
yeah,
far
but
as
mine were more important.
Episode wins, it's you.
Yeah, episode wins all that matters.
Yeah.
How many points you scored.
All right. Well, I like that we're keeping it light because this is going to be an absolute shit show. Tonight, we're going to hear recasting four.
I'm pretty proud about it, actually. I feel pretty good about this.
Oh, I don't know how you could. This is impossible. What are you talking about? Nero Pacino? Shut the fuck up.
With the understanding
going
into it.
Just leave it where it
is. Yeah, dude, stop.
Oh, my God.
No, with the understanding going into it.
Going a little too hard into your recastings. A little too hard. They're not that good. Settle down.
With the understanding that it's impossible, I'm saying I feel pretty good about it. With keeping that in mind. Anyway.
We will hear a recasting for Prank. I'm sorry.
Prank.
We will hear a
Are you pranking? Just we put will his first and last name together. Prank Fintangeli.
I don't do that often.
All right. Lay off the tequila.
We'll hear a recasting for Frank Pentangeli, Connie Corleone, Hyman Roth, Frito Corleone, Kay Corleone, Tom Hagen, Vito Corleone, and Michael Corleone. As should be in recasting this.
Corleone.
If we need a tiebreaker, Vito Corleone.
Yeah, as it should be. If it was anyone other than Vito, it'd be a mockery.
Yeah, no, good call. Good call.
So, Phil.
Yeah.
Ball's in your court.
I don't think it is. Warren won the last one.
So.
Yeah.
Warren. Ball's in your court.
Yeah.
I'm an honest loser.
Look, I did the best I could to cast actors who had some Italian heritage. I think I did okay for the most part, but there's definitely a couple outliers here. Sorry, but you know, when you're casting a movie this big, you really have to pick from the upper echelon of today's stars, sure. and that's a little limited in the Italian Americans. So, what are you going to do? My Frankie, however, this one is money, Italian American actor. Joe Pesci is my Frankie. Yes. What way to write the world or to have it Joe Pesci in a Godfather film. And now that he's an older actor, I really love what he did in The Irishman, playing an older gangster. This is a variation of that. Joe Pesci has so much range, and we haven't seen him play a mobster like this before. It would be an interesting wrinkle to a very decorated and versatile career.
Yeah, the Frankie character has, like, he has power, obviously. He's, you know, a capo in the family. But there is, there's this side of him that's just, like, there's, like, no muscle behind him. You don't really feel threatened by him. You just kind of, I don't know. It's like he's almost kept around by Michael as a favor to his dad, you know, because he's, like, been a part of the family for so long.
Well, you know, the thing is, Joe Pesci was never that imposing of an actor. He was such a great actor. He could play intimidating, as a smaller actor that didn't have a lot of size. He still made you believe he was a fucking badass. That's how good he is.
Right. No, I wasn't. You know, I love Joe Pesci. I think it's great. The point I was trying to make is you do want to have an actor that could believably be a capo and still have the range to pull that to both sides of it off. I mean, the original actor nominated for an Academy Award for this role. So I've also pulled an actor with range and talent to do this that can encompass the Frankie character. I went with Paul Giamatti as my Frankie.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Coming
up against Pesci, though, I mean, you're going, it's the Godfather, bitch.
I know. I know. We both kept it Italian, though, so that's good.
I have such a soft spot in my heart for Paul Giamatti. I love this man. Love his work. I think he's an incredible actor in our time, and we can't talk about him enough. However, we're recasting The Godfather, and this
That's
is
right.
his chance to jump in.
Yep.
Nothing I can do.
Well, you're like you're trying to legitimize your poor recasting choices by bringing in like Pesci.
Okay, I was looking through the rule book, and it says as long as it doesn't make sense, then it makes sense.
Wow, man, you really just summed up your recasting decisions to a T.
Yeah, well, he's got longer hair, and he's 2 inches taller, so I'm going to go awards choice.
That's the only rule in the rule book, apparently.
Random deciding X factors.
Random.
All right, moving on. Warren. Who is Connie Corleone?
My Connie Corleone? I went with another Italian, so I'm doing good here. Lady Gaga, big-time actress, has been in some big movies with, of course, A Star Is Born, and then most recently in Ridley Scott's House of Gucci. So she's proven she's got the range to be in big films, award films. And not even have to sing in them. So, I mean, she's that good. So, I think she would be terrific at this.
Yeah. Not a lot of screen time, but, and actually, we did not recast Connie in the first Godfather film. We did
13 characters, and we didn't recast Connie Corleone. Yeah. Well, she's a franchise pivotal character, so we obviously didn't know what the hell we were doing.
And I think also got an Oscar nom for this role. She's only in like 3 pivotal scenes in the film, but she does a lot with a little. So yes, you do want an actress that can pull that off. Again, you're trying to bring some legitimacy, some talent. I also went with Lady Gaga.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Holy shit.
Yep. So ending the season with a matchup, which I do want to say is our 19th matchup of the season.
Is that the most of any season?
Judge Bob, that's the most we've had. I think the second most prior to this was like 11 or 13 or something like that. So
You keeping up with like fucking basketballreference.com. We got our fucking replay value podcast reference.com. Jesus, like tracking stats like never, well, like no podcast.
Our audience knows these recastings are going to be so terrible given the impossible just nature of this that he's keeping it interesting for him, right? You know,
yeah.
They were like,
well done.
I'm going to fast forward to the next part here, but Phil's got some good stats on this.
Thanks.
One, so I'm going to
hang
in
this
there
what
for
I do.
It, you know,
yeah. This is what I do.
All right. Warren. Keep it rolling. The ball is technically still in your court. So who do we have as Hyman Roth?
Hyman Roth, who is based on the real-life mobster Meyer Lansky. And the actor who played Hyman Roth in real life, Lee Strasberg, one of the great acting teachers of all time.
Yeah.
My choice for Hyman Roth is an actor who was trained by Lee Strasberg himself, and later became an acting teacher who was my acting teacher. D.W. Brown is going to be my Hyman Roth.
Okay. I think you're casting not your point.
He's been D.W. Brown was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He's been in some big movies.
I understand that, but you're pointing in the personal connection. That's you're making too much of that.
He's actually a student of Lee Strasberg, mm-hmm. who became an actor, and he's one of the great acting teachers
that
today.
Mean he would make a good Hyman Roth, though.
And he is a working actor. He's in films. He has credits all the time.
Okay. Well,
so, I mean, it's an great acting teacher who has acting parts in big films. And
I feel like
there's something Lee Strasberg is doing in this part that is really a master Jedi level acting. It's really terrific, and you need a master actor in there doing that.
Yeah, but you don't need the Lee Strasberg acting teacher connection to get there. So I went with someone.
Well, it's all much better if you can find it. So
I did go with again, you know. We've talked about, or at least I have talked about, how recency bias does play into this. I've been watching The White Lotus. I just finished season 2. Fantastic show. And I was
you just watched season 1 and season 2 recently. You were kind of behind on that, right?
I was, yeah. I just finished it with a couple weeks ago.
So good.
So this actor, we've yet to use him on the podcast. Fantastic. Could play the Hyman Roth, the danger, but he's like, oh, is he dying? You know, everything that Strasberg played so well with this Roth character. I went with F. Murray Abraham. Love him. He's so good.
He steals a lot of scenes in White Lotus season 2. I guarantee you he is one of the 3 actors nominated for an Emmy for White Lotus. It's only going to be 3. It's going to be Daphne, the character that played Daphne, mm-hmm. Jennifer Coolidge's character, Tanya, and then F. Murray Abraham's character. Those are the 3 actors. I'm calling it right now. I'm calling my shot. Those are the 3 actors from White Lotus season 2 that get nominated for Emmys.
And well done, Phil.
Yes, thank
you. F. Murray Abraham.
Bullshit.
Yes.
D.W. Brown is much better.
And I'm sure it is, but come on, it's F. Murray Abraham. He's great. We've never used him.
Keep it moving, Phil. Fredo Corleone.
Fredo was a tough one for me. I mean, John Cazale, the actor, is, I mean, of course, passed on. But, man, he's so great, and I feel like underappreciated, especially as Fredo. But it's a great role. He plays it so well. So one of the more difficult recastings in a movie that's difficult to recast. So I considered I'll tell you our Fredos from Godfather so you can kind of see how stupid we were. Warren, your Fredo was Viggo Mortensen. My Fredo was Sam Rockwell. Not bad choices, but I kind of went a little bit more with your Viggo route, which is like somebody who doesn't typically play that type of somewhat pathetic character, but that could play it well. So I thought like Pedro Pascal, even almost broached maybe a potential Nicolas Cage, but I was like, it doesn't feel right. I went with Giovanni Ribisi as my Fredo.
Interesting choice. I'm smart!
Well, he's actually in that new show, The Offer, which is like a Godfather.
Oh, you're cheating. Yeah. What are you doing? Then he's playing somebody that's making the movie. Come on.
I didn't. It's a series. I didn't find out about that.
Did you finish it? I was a little out on The Offer.
I haven't watched it yet.
It didn't keep me. Okay. My Fredo. They knew Robbie. Another great actor who can go big and go small. He's got all the range. Mark Ruffalo is my Fredo Corleone. Come on.
I thought about him, too. That's pretty good.
He's got the face for it, too. He's perfect.
I think a little longer the tooth for Fredo at this point in the Godfather saga, but
John Cazale was a little... No. He wasn't older, but Mark, maybe a little.
Ruffalo is in his 50s now. Guys,
you get the slow clap on this one. I mean, these are both really fantastic castings.
Oh, thank you. A rare compliment.
Oh, here's the butt.
Here's the butt. Oh, okay.
No, this one like has me. It's hard because Mark Ruffalo has the demeanor that you would want, that you hate, right? He's just kind of meh. Like, it's just meh. Like, you just, his screen time and every, but Giovanni Ribisi is just, God, we grew up with Boiler Room and this guy, that face, everything about him, kind of felt right.
Thank you.
So Fredo is Giovanni Ribisi.
Fuck! Dude, if I lose The Godfather Part 2, I'm pulling a Jay and Silent Bob, I'm getting on a plane, and I'm fucking kicking some ass. Already, this is bullshit!
All right. Phil, reluctantly, keep it going. Who is Kay Corleone?
Kay Corleone, I had considered, you know, again, a role, there's, you know, the movie, like, I think 30% or over 35%, I wanted to say, of the screen time is with Michael. So a lot of the characters that played a bigger part in the first film or in the next film were somewhat in the back burner. So limited screen time for Kay, but you do a lot with a little. Diane Keaton, fantastic actress. You just need... You need a stud just to step in and just knock it out of the park with the scenes that they have. I considered Amy Adams, Jennifer Connelly. I've already used Jennifer Connelly this season. But I did go with Rachel McAdams, who would fit that level of clout.
Oh, I mean, I love Rachel McAdams, big fan. But, you know, for my K, I went with an actor a little bit more pedigree who has really demonstrated their ability to play just about anything. I did consider Amy Adams, Margot Robbie. How can you not? Mm-hmm. Top of her industry, top of her category. She's got to be considered for everything. You're a fool if you don't. I went with Saoirse Ronan as my K Corleone.
Ooh.
I think I got you there, bitch.
Well, I will say before you get to the ruling there, Bob, our case in The Godfather, you did Jennifer Lawrence. Not bad. Here's the recency bias for me kicking in even back then. Lucy Boynton. She was the female lead opposite Rami Malek's Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody. So, yeah, I was not great there. I do like the Saoirse Ronan. However, this is a little bit older of a part, I feel like. The Corleone family, Michael's been established for years. She very much plays younger, so I feel like she's almost just like not.
She's around not the same age Diane Keaton was then, and you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And I'm sorry, but a lot of men, especially back then, married much younger. So you really, what are you saying?
I don't know. I'm grasping here. I love Saoirse. I can't say anything against Saoirse Ronan other than I just don't feel like she.
She's the youngest 3-time Oscar nominee in history, and Diane Keaton was pretty, had saying. A lot of accolades too. So
what the hell am I going to say against her? She's fantastic, but I just, you know,
she's anyway. So good. She wins. That's what she is.
Yes. Fuck. Yes.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
But it felt like on paper, it felt like a reach, and then you just kind of like, but it's not. It just, you know. It was well done.
Nothing with Saoirse Ronan is a reach. She can do anything. She's got incredible range.
All right. So, Warren.
Yeah.
Tom Hagen. What do we got here?
Matt Damon.
Really?
Matt Damon is, I mean, come on. He is such a great actor, either whether the lead, supporting, or just being a cameo part. I could see him being the Rock here, you know, to whoever's Michael Corleone, whoever we cast, who's remained to be revealed. Yeah, Matt Damon, Tom Hagen. Got to have some star power in this thing.
Hollywood loves universes. We need to start like our own recasting universe because technically just recast Shooter McGavin as Tom Hagen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. He was your choice for Shooter, right, Bob?
He still won the casting, though.
He won the cast. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Somehow you bring it back to your sole victory.
He's got to make it about himself.
Just circles back.
Okay.
Yep. That's why my seat sits higher than yours.
In Godfather, in that episode, 3 years ago, we matched up on Tom Hagen Warren with Edward Norton as our choice.
Holy shit.
Hagen. And I look back and I'm going to stick by that. I really like.
We're going with the Rounders crew for Tom Hagen.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Rounders. Yeah. But no, there's this quiet, reserved disposition to Hagen that I feel like Norton is just, there's a reason we matched up on it in season one. And I'm sticking with it. I think.
And you cheated by going and looking at the old ones.
You said you were going to go look at them too. They're out there.
I didn't.
That's your own fault. That's not cheating.
Article posted, I think like a week or two ago, about Edward Norton. That he is a direct descendant of John Rolfe and Pocahontas.
Hmm.
Okay. I share the same lineage. Really? Me and Ed, we're family. It's a long, you know,
seventh cousins, thrice removed.
Somehow, way, shape, or form, because we go back to the Rolfe family, and
once again, making it about so yourself. Does somehow,
there we go. Somehow, yeah. Is this going to include your victory a couple episodes ago? Are we going to tie it back?
Yeah, you know, night court music could play here. The only thing, I loved the Edward Norton casting, but I can't get Damon out of my head on this.
You know, you cannot give this to Damon. Dude, Norton one is so much better. The way that Hagen, unbelievable. No way.
Yeah, and
no way. Unbelievable.
Big brother takes the lead.
Here's the justification. Everything is recency bias.
Oh, no, here's the justification.
And the glass onion just dropped. And, you know.
Glass onion was good. Do you not like it?
Oh, I loved it. I'm a huge why am I?
I'm
docking
Daniel
you for recency bias. Yeah.
No. But I said the reasoning. That wasn't recency bias in this situation, though. This is going
back.
Yeah,
but if you go with the other reasoning, then you just like. Then you mailed it in because you both picked him in the last one. So you're just like,
that's just how good it was. That's the only one I did that with. That's how good he was.
Look, man, this is Hollywood. Name one movie where they keep the same actor for the same character in different movies. It never happens, man. It
never happens.
Warren, who do you have cast as Vito Corleone?
Look, this is obviously the one that's the hardest for me because it's the most iconic character. Okay, he's played by Marlon Brando and Robert De Niro, and they both won Oscars. It's just impossible. I mean, we can't even go DiCaprio here because, I already used him, but wish I wouldn't have. I probably just would have thrown him in here anyway. I had to go with a young actor, leading man, who just has shown promise, but still has a lot of legs left to what his career could be. I went with Robert Pattinson as my Vito Corleone. He's really done some great independent film work. Of course, he's now Batman, but Good Time. If you've not seen Good Time, he is really shows his range in that. You can't compare him to De Niro in his prime, but Robert Pattinson is a special, special actor, and I think he would rise to the occasion in this part.
So obviously, this is the younger Vito, the original Marlon Brando. We matched up on that one as well, Warren. Daniel Day-Lewis in the first film.
Yeah, yeah.
A given there. So for my Vito, I do like the Robert Pattinson, and that is very good. I have used him this season already. However, I'd consider Timothy Chalamet. Neither one of us have used Chalamet
too young.
This season.
Yeah,
but he's too young. You're right. So like when it's younger Vito, when he first arrives to New York, I feel like you could get away with it there, but it kind of covers several years and you kind of see him grow and mature. That's where it kind of would lose it with me with the youthfulness of Chalamet. So I went with Jeremy Allen White. Is from Shameless, The Bear, fantastic young actor, and one I know we said you're comparing.
He just won a Golden Globe last week.
Yeah, he's just so good. And
I told you about The Bear.
You did tell me about The Bear.
The Bear is fantastic.
I watched it a few months ago, so this is not recency bias here. I just really love this actor, so I think he'd be great.
So you guys are knotted up going into this, and this is a tiebreaker. So regardless of the winner, if the opposing team.
No, I'm in the lead 3-2.
This is going to take it.
I'm in the lead. He's up 3-2 right now, so with the tie. So
fantastic. I just write down stuff as we go.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly. There's so much about the Italian migrant portion that there's got to be that portrayal on screen done right. Mm. It's just a certain aspect that is, I think, going to be. I think this is a very difficult acting job. I do.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I trust Arpat like crazy on this. I think this guy is just scratching the surface, still teasing us.
Right. Yes.
Robert Pattinson. Well done.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I've lost now.
Yep.
Ed Norton was much better. Sorry.
Okay. Here we go. Let's finish the segment.
So was Giamatti. You suck. You suck.
D.W. Brown should have won.
You're right on Giamatti. You absolutely should have won on Giamatti.
But Pesci, come on.
That one made the most amount of sense. It just, your judge is
an idiot.
For lack of a better term.
I know it was you, Bob. I know it was you. You broke my heart.
He is like trying to get disbarred, but nobody else will take the mantle. So he's just stuck up there.
It's an impossible job. Yeah.
All right. Well, so is this next one. Michael Corleone.
Ugh.
Warren.
Yeah.
Sitting on a victory already.
Yes.
With the season over, I'm not afraid to burn anybody here. So
yeah.
Who did you save for your last casting?
Well, I think he's in this is a very good pairing with my Robert Pattinson, another actor who has shown his elite potential and promise, but still has a lot of career left. He can play anything. One of our great leading men today, Adam Driver, as my Michael Corleone.
He was also your Michael Corleone in The Godfather,
really?
By the way.
I did not. Wow, yes. Killing it.
You didn't know that. Yes, you did.
I did not remember that. I did it for Gus 3 years ago, whatever. And I didn't look.
Okay. Now, this is recency bias, and I am not ashamed to admit it. Just got done watching Andor. This actor is great. He's got just the that kind of brooding nature of Michael, but there's a threat underneath, but he's also very composed when he needs to be. This guy could be the Godfather. Diego Luna is my Michael Corleone.
Huh. Wow.
Wow. He's awesome.
Okay. No, he's a great actor. It's just wow. Okay.
Do we have enough? Do we have enough left in the budget this late in the season to cue the Star Wars music? I want to hear the saber fight as you guys go. Adam Driver, Diego Luna.
Diego Luna's well, no, oh, that's nerd true. Yeah, you Phil. Adam Driver's from Star Wars. See, I don't even fucking barely know. The new trilogy sucks. I've seen each one of those films once.
No.
The new trilogy, you like?
You can't say that.
What?
The sequel trilogy is straight ass.
It is straight ass. Force Awakens, Last Jedi, and Skywalker Rises, whatever the fuck that was.
What are you going to say? The Jurassic Park dinosaurs don't look real now?
The Force Awakens was just a rehash of A New Hope, so it's decent, but it was just...
Well, it's decent because that's Harrison Ford doing Han Solo. It's
the nostalgic factor, but...
Yeah, so it's acceptable because they're in
Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, no.
Complete shit.
They're not great.
I don't know. Adam Driver's just so good with so much range.
Yeah.
He's one of those people that it gets harder and harder.
What? He's going to win an Oscar one day.
To go against him in a casting. He just...
Uh-huh.
I think that he's just one of those names that we're going to continue to see grow and mature right in front of us.
Yep. So,
Adam Driver.
Thank you. Wow. Took this one. Just fucking took it.
Victory!
Yeah, okay. Well, despite your efforts to chase a tie, Bob, the final totals for the season is you won one. There was one flat-out tie. Brandon won one. Corey won one. Warren won 9. And I won 10. So
fuck
suck on
you.
That.
Well, guess what? But the all-time record's 34-30. So fucking put that in your pipe and smoke it.
So, I did look at that and... technically, it's now one of those should have gone to Bob. I had it counting for you instead. So you actually now winning 33-30. So whatever.
And just like in Highlander, there's only one undefeated.
Here we go. Okay.
Okay. Let's see. Right. Okay.
You need to see HR on the way out for your exit interview.
Yeah, dude. Oh, shit.
We'll be interviewing new candidates in the off season
during our hiatus.
Recasting court is adjourned.
All right, fan theory time. You were going to be off the hook.
I thought iconic movie. There's a chance he might just not do it.
So I will season finale. I'll give you a little bit of a break in that it's not a true fan theory.
Oh man.
But I'm almost gonna. The fan theory is that the plot doesn't make any sense, and I'm gonna tell you why. It's all due to an ad lib by Danny Aiello when they're gonna knock off Frankie Pentangeli, and he goes to kill him, and Aiello says, Michael Corleone says hello when he goes to kill him. You know, that was the whole basis of Frankie turning on Michael and going to the Congress, which seems like it was Roth's plan, but that whole situation was fabricated because mm-hmm. of the cop showing up, which they didn't expect. I mean, they were gonna actually kill Frankie. So the whole plot of going to Congress doesn't make any sense when you consider that. And Aiello has gone on in interviews to say that he did ad-lib that line and Coppola really liked it and kept it in. But when you really think about it in the nature of the whole film and the story, it actually is quite the plot hole. It does not hold up. It doesn't make any sense. Gotcha. Finally gotcha, man. You're speechless.
No.
Such a good...
I just think that's great movies have... plot holes. I just think it's a plot hole. It doesn't mean the movie doesn't make sense. I just think it's a mistake. No, I mean, it's a perfect movie in every other way, in acting, performance, direction, the writing of the screenplay, the everybody on the crew, man. I mean, it's just top-notch filmmaking across the board in every way. So, you know, they made a mistake here or there. They left a Starbucks cup on a table.
What that sounds like, don't compare this to Game of Thrones. That's not, you're losing your argument with the... What that sounds like to me is I have a very sound fan theory here. Well, it's not really a fan theory, a plot thing, plot hole, you know, and you're busted. You don't have anything to say about it. So
no, whatever.
I win. Finally won one. Gotcha.
No, it can neither be confirmed nor denied. And we'll close out the episode discussing the legacy of The Godfather Part II. I mean, let's face it, widely considered one of the greatest films in cinema history and around the world, for that matter. The Godfather franchise, 3 feature films, of course, duh. But the first film, The Godfather, 1972. This film, The Godfather Part II, 1974. And then the third and final film, The Godfather Part III, in 1990. Funny enough, the same year Goodfellas came out. 2 video games based on the Godfather movies. The Godfather video game, where you create a character and you join the Corleone family.
Have you played it?
Yes, I did. And it had Marlon Brando's voice. He performed in the game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So that's why I did it. And you can make it look like you and stuff. So you actually
I never played that game. And I know you don't play a lot of video games. I remember you playing that game.
Yeah, Brando's in a video game. You know I'm playing it. Yeah,
dude. And you can create yourself in the Corleone family.
You know I'm down. And then the Godfather Part II video game, not anywhere near as good. I started to play it and didn't even finish it. The Godfather game, I beat the shit out of that. They canceled Godfather Part III video game. They were going to make it. They ended up making it.
I wouldn't be surprised if we get another Godfather game. I mean, that IP is so rich for it. I think there was a little bit of oversaturation with, you know, we talk about the things that had helped spawn and whatnot, video games being one of them, but just the overabundance of like mafia related, things in pop culture, like Sopranos, Godfather video games. I mean, I think it was a lot. And so it'll cool off and then it'll come back. I mean, we've already seen The Offer, the TV show. So I'm sure that the video games will also return. What we need is a Godfather musical. That's what we need.
Oh,
musical
not going to happen.
The Godfather.
Not going to happen. Favorite installment in the Godfather franchise?
Okay. It goes back and forth. Right now, today, if
you were to ask me... I was going to say that same thing, back and forth for me.
Today, if you were to ask me, it's The Godfather, actually.
Yeah, same. Me too. Yeah, right. Today it is.
And I think, you know, probably you asked me 6 months ago, it was Godfather Part II. It's just like I revisit these films every couple years. They're just so good together.
I think the first Godfather has a little bit higher replay value because of the linear narrative, as opposed to this one. It's a little bit long, but it's still great. But I think the first Godfather really, higher replay value.
This has to set the record for the longest film we've done on the podcast. We've had some right around the 3 hour mark, but this is
fucking pushing it, man.
Yeah. I mean, this could easily be two films or a miniseries. I mean,
two Dunkirks. We just did Dunkirks. Double Dunkirk, man.
Double Dunkirk. Yeah.
Dunkirk, it just made me think of Duncan. Dunkirk Duncan. Anyway, spoofs of the film.
So many of the Godfather.
Okay, the very first spoof were the Mad Magazine parodies. Okay, yeah. But they were before our time. Coonskin, which came out in the 70s. New Jack City, early 90s. SNL, The Simpsons, which, of course, how can you forget Don Homer?
Don Homer, I have baked a special donut just for you.
Grazie.
Don Homer, my son, he has a trouble with the...
Molto bene. That's a nice donut.
It was spoofed in Seinfeld, Third Rock, Family Guy, Zoolander, Better Call Saul, most recently.
Whether it be part one.
And there's a bunch more. That's just some of my favorites.
There's so many spoofs of The Godfather, the theme, and it's just like, it plays into effect there. Yeah. Obviously, it's, it's one of the, being La Cosa Nostra, the La Familia, that whole take as far as the mafia gangster films. It was the originator of that, I would say, in the wide mainstream media consumption of culture. Spawned a whole subgenre for that. So now we did this back in episode 9 of this season for Casino, where we ranked our top 5 gangster films. Now we just talked about how we go back and forth between Godfather 1 and 2 being which one's the best. These lists are subject to change. So I want to ask you again, 13 episodes, 6 months later, to re-rank your top 5 gangster films.
Yeah, I'll do it.
I'll tell you, I'm going to do mine. Well, go ahead. You go ahead. You go first.
Right. Okay. Number 5 is Scarface.
Okay.
Number 4 is Pulp Fiction.
Okay, that's a gangster film.
It's definitely
now a who's game. now who's stretching it a little bit.
You've set the precedent. So go fuck yourself.
All right.
Number 3, The Godfather Part 2.
Uh huh.
Number 2 is Goodfellas, and number 1, of course, The Godfather.
Godfather. Okay. So back in episode 9, my 5-1, mine were Donnie Brasco, Carlito's Way, Godfather 2, Departed, and Goodfellas. Did not even have The Godfather in my top 5. What was I thinking? I don't even know.
Wow. Like, idiot.
I think I made some half-ass explanation that I didn't want to have both Godfather films.
Yeah,
in
but
my
you'll
top
put
five.
Mandalorian season 1 and season 2 in a top 5.
Yeah,
a lot of logic.
I've learned a thing or two in the past 6 months, you may say. So my updated top 5, and this is how, into season 5, so I'm going to stand by this one a little bit more. Number 5, Godfather Part 2. Number 4, Carlito's Way. Number 3, Departed. Number 2, Goodfellas. Number 1, The Godfather.
That's the GOAT.
Yeah. Departed's
my number 6.
Mentions, honorable mentions, Scarface.
Irishman's number 7.
Irishman. For me, I had Donnie Brasco and Scarface.
Donnie Brasco.
Not making the cut. And again, a lot of this is personal favorites. Carlito's Way may not make it for other people. I love that movie. It's so good.
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, let's talk about, you did mention the impact. I mean, Godfather Part 2, it laid the groundwork for great sequels. I mean, it helped the sequel genre, if you will. It helped those movies get made. I mean, back in the day, sequels were faux pas. I mean, they did not make them. You were considered selling out. I mean, it was frowned upon artistically.
I mean, yeah, you get success doing it. Hollywood's going to mimic that and show that it can be done. And if, what was it? I guess it would be like, 70s, 80s, Jaws 2. I mean, it's just like the audience is gonna eat up that familiar intellectual property.
Yeah.
Who cares if it's numbered? Godfather definitely helped set the precedent by winning, best picture for both films.
I mean, we all know the impact it had on the gangster genre, but also you can't forget the music industry. I mean, how many name drops and Godfather themes have been worked yes. into all the different songs by all the different types of music?
I mean, you look at Snoop Dogg, the Dogfather. I mean, so many plays off of the name right. Godfather. I mean, and you talk about a great title can go a long way. I mean, the Godfather, it's pretty iconic. I mean, to take that and just like, you know, the different plays and that you can do on it. The logo with the puppeteer hands, you know, there's so many, the theme. I mean, there's just mm-hmm. so many things that lightning in a bottle, to use a cliche turn of phrase, but with the name, the music, the logo, the acting, I mean, just the mafia, what it's about. I mean, there were just so many things that just hit, that resonate with mm-hmm. pop culture, with society as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned this earlier, but it's a credit that this film was able to turn out to be great. I mean, the deck was stacked against Godfather Part II. No Brando, the shadow of the first film, lots of characters from the first film are missing in Part II. So Part II looks at interior life at the family, and it's not outside of it like Part One. So, like we talked about, it's more of a personal story. Part Two enhances the greatness of the first movie, and that's why these two work so well together.
Well, and again, I'm going to go back to what we talked about earlier at the beginning, to where, you know, the content, the origin, the origin of Godfather and Godfather Part Two came from the 1969 Godfather novel. So the source material, having that source material completed and ready, I mean, I hate to use this example, but look at Game of Thrones. When they had the source material to go off of, I mean, they were hitting home run. I mean, they were just, it was fantastic. So it's not like, I feel like it would be a different story if it said, all right, the novel, The Godfather, covered the first film. It was successful. And then you got to start from scratch to say, let's write a new book. Let's get it developed. I mean, you already had that there. Puzo was working on the script early stages before the first Godfather even came out. So that seamlessness of the story, the continuation of the characters, the just how organic and real that it felt, and the quality, I mean, it all felt cohesive enough for it to work. So, yeah, they would have been stupid not to capitalize on it, but the fact that they did and had that to work off of made it all it made it easier, but it made it all for the better. Normally we'll talk about like double feature, like what do you pair this with? Do we even need to talk about
it? I mean, other than say that it's the greatest 1-2 punch in movie history, we do not. Double feature, Godfather Part 2.
If you pair this with anything else, I mean, what are you going to do? Watch it with Part 3? Get the fuck out of me. Come on.
Well, no, hold on. If you want to get creative, you could go Heat if you want to go Pacino, De Niro.
Come on. See, now you're... You can't
stretching it. Yeah, you can't do
it. You're stretching it. No, you keep
it. I'm trying to think outside the box. What are you going to do? Because there was a time when those were the only two movies of Pacino, De Niro in it, before The Irishman and before Righteous Kill or whatever that shitty cop movie they did together was.
Yeah. And it was so iconic in Heat, and not to go off on a tangent, because they'd never actually shared the screen together, been in a scene together, and they were with Heat, whereas, you know, there was a lot of hype because they were, you know, playing opposite different timelines in Godfather 2. So,
all-time list. I mean, you got to talk about this. Godfather, AFI's top 100 movies all time. It ranks number 32, both on the 1997 list and the 2007 list. So same ranking. Yeah.
That's weird. Wow.
Didn't move. Fourth on IMDb's top 250 movies of all time. Ranked number 3 on AFI's top 10 gangster movies of all time.
Number 3?
Yeah. Yeah, behind Godfather and Goodfellas, probably. Ranked 4th on the Hollywood Reporter's Hollywood 100 Favorite Films. Ranked 6th on Time Out's 100 Best Movies. 6th on the DGA's 80 Best Directed Films. 10th on the WGA's 10th Greatest Screenplays Ever. So, I mean, that's some pretty that's high
Directors
praise.
Directors Guild and Writers Guild.
Yeah, the Writers Guild, 10th on the BBC's Greatest American Films. I mean, I could just keep naming these.
I was saying, like, how many top 10 lists, all time lists, are they in?
Keep Your Friends Close and Your Enemies Closer was voted number 58 on the AFI's Best Movie Quote, the 100 Top Movie Quote list of all time.
And that was my winner. You had it as your runner up.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's the most. Yeah, I know. I missed it there. All right. And it was selected by the Library of Congress for the U.S. National Film Registry, the first sequel ever to accomplish that feat.
Yeah. So a long time coming for us to have it on the podcast. Yeah, we closed season 2 with Godfather, closing season 5 with Godfather Part 2. So maybe season 12 we'll do Godfather Part 3 as the closer.
No, I don't think so, man. I think we gotta probably gotta leave Godfather 3 alone, bro. And James Berardinelli of Real Views summed it up best when he said, quote, "As the beginning of Part 2 echoes the opening of The Godfather, so too does the end. Because of the manner in which the circumstances are handled and considered the people involved, the impact here is more forceful. The tragic flaw has accomplished its poisonous, inevitable designs." Coppola punctuates both movies with a gut-twisting exclamation point. Unquote.
That is going to do it for this episode of Replay Value and Season 5 of the Replay Value Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. The Replay Value Podcast is hosted by me, Philip Reinerson, and my brother, Warren Paul. Our recasting judge is Bob Thompson. Produced, edited, and directed by Waldo Pickles Productions, and dedicated to our father, who we had to thank for our love of cinema. Please be sure to follow the podcast, and if you like what you hear, take the time to rate, review, and share with a friend. You can visit us on our website, replayvaluepod.com, and follow us on Twitter at replayvaluepod. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are in the off-season now, looking forward to Season 6. Our next episode will be the Season 6 premiere on Tuesday, April 4th, and we'll see you then.
Bye!
This has been a Waldo Pickles production.